Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and you can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later on in the program, we will be speaking to performer Christy Carson about her work that is coming up in Santa Fe. And sitting before me at the table is Zuleika. She is the founder and director of the Story Dancer Project, and we're going to be talking to her about also an upcoming performance. But first, we're going to hear some music of Rahim Alhaj, who will be performing with Zuleika this coming Friday. And that is music of Rahim Alhaj. I'd like now to welcome Zuleika. She is the founder and director of the Story Dancer Project, and she has a performance this coming Friday night, October 23rd, at 7:30 at the Armory for the Arts here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
It's great to have you back. Now, this is an evening of music, dance, rhythm, story, poetry, and humor with the wonderful and ever more famous oud player Rahim Alhaj, as well as Palestinian American drummer Issa Malouf. What is the nature of this collaboration? It's not just a music concert, although it is that.
Right. Well, we called it Origin, and it's heart streaming. And I actually thought of that because when you always say we're live streaming on the web, and I thought, heart streaming, that would be a nice thing to be doing.
And heart streaming live,
yeah,
not
heart
just on the web.
Heart streaming live all the time. And Origin I thought of because here we all are, it's 2009. Rahim is from the tradition of oud masters from Baghdad, Iraq, which is really phenomenal. He grew up in a conservatory of classical Iraqi music, Arabic music, and continues that to this day, and he's a Grammy nominee. And Issa Malouf is this wonderful, I think, a hidden treasure of this area. He lives now in Albuquerque, as does Rahim. And he's very masterful with hand drumming, the rick, the tambourine, the frame drum, the dumbek. And myself, with my background, I'm from California. I'm trained in contemporary movement and East Indian classical dance in Bali, and I lived in Afghanistan and studied with masters there. And here we are on this planet, and now we have Nicholas Ballas, who's a local actor who is going to join us for some surprise pieces. And what is the origin of all of our humanity? And I think that would be heart-streaming. And I think this evening is going to be a lot of fun, and it's in the genre of other things I've done, in the sense that it's not one thing or another. It's not an oud night. It's not a drum night. It's not a dance night.
And it is all those things.
And it's
also
all those things, and it's a collaborative weaving that promises to be ancient and future at the same time.
So you were trained in various kinds of dance. The oud is, what would you call it, a Middle Eastern instrument?
Yeah.
So is the dance you do specifically Middle Eastern, or you just adapt to the kind of music that you're listening to?
Yeah, I don't do Middle Eastern per se dancing. I think that's not my expertise of field, but I love music. I'm a musician dancer. I never heard anyone say that, but I just love all kinds of music. And because I'm working with story dance, which is telling story while I'm dancing, sometimes with words and sometimes not, I find that music is the thread that helps me weave whatever it is, the characters, the subjects that I'm working with. And the oud is a relative of the lute, for anyone who's not familiar with it. I was first introduced to the oud with the master Hamza el-Din, who isn't alive now, but he is one of the first oud masters to come to the West, I think, in the 70s. And he taught me a lot about that music.
So when you do the kind of story dancing that you do, and we've talked to you before in advance of some of the Rumi work that you've done, concerts where the poetry of Rumi is read, and those have been happening, I think, pretty much on an annual basis for some time here in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Meanwhile, you are doing these stories, some of which are from India or from other places, and they are being perhaps spoken aloud. But what is the role of music in these? Is it kind of like background music, or does the music actually help tell the story?
Yeah, the music actually creates the atmosphere for the story to emerge. And of course, with Rahim's music and Issa's drumming, I don't think that will be very difficult. It's so inspiring. You know, in the ancient technology of story, music, dance, art, community, this is a technology that has been in communities since human beings. And so this concert, we're not trying to replicate something ancient. We're saying, here it is now, today. And stories are ever important. Wisdom stories are the way that people learn things. And music is the way that these stories unfold. And dancing has always kept the memories of the people and the animals and how things went together. And the pottery and the paintings were pictures of the depictions of how the dancers and the musicians held the memories. So I think by coming together in such an event, we're opening ourselves to how this looks now. It's wonderful when people do the old pictures of it, but here we all are in America. That's another interesting thing. Rahim has had to flee Iraq and now lives in Albuquerque. Issa's family came from Palestine. My family came from all over the place. You know, Nicholas's family lives in New Mexico, and it's Greek origin, I believe. But here we all are. You're sitting here. You love the Cuban music. We're all here now. And so what is the way that we open ourselves to art and the story and the melody and the rhythm? Something like that.
And what is our common thread?
Yeah. Well, I would say, in this case, the heart. You know, hopefully the heart of love, greater love, that is open for everyone to remember.
One thing that I was thinking about, I was in a dance performance once, sitting very quietly in the audience and kind of out of shape and sluggish, and watching these people move on stage with their incredible bodies and control. And it's the same when you watch any kind of virtuosic performance, and you're kind of like almost a jellyfish sitting in the chair in comparison to these people. And then you wonder, what is the ancient relationship between audience and performer? And I kind of imagine that they were more somehow united, that there wasn't quite the division between spectator and participant as there is now in the theater.
Well, you know, Hamza el-Din, who I just mentioned earlier, the Egyptian oud master, told me one time that the relationship of the audience and the performer is that they make the two points of the base of a triangle, and that the top point is the communion that happens, or the silent witness of the audience participating. The audience is a witness to the performer, and then this connection creates that top point, which is the all-seeing, you might say, or the mysterious that we don't know what to say this is.
The muse,
or the, yeah. I mean, everyone would probably have a different name for it. But instead of the critic mind, when you bring yourself as an audience, as a willing participant, like maybe your participation is in silence, but as a willing participant, it creates an atmosphere, and then everyone travels together. And I think that that's an ancient future relationship between audience and performer.
This performance, among other things, is a benefit for the Story Dancer Project, which is a nonprofit organization that you founded, and you do incredible work all over the world.
Thank you.
Tell
this particular performance is a... Well, we're a nonprofit organization. I call it an artistic health resource organization. That's our trademark name. Because I'm an artist, and I'm interested in health and well-being through the body, mind, soul, spirit, but with the body. And so we work with exercise, rhythm, melody, and delight, and stories in areas of the world where this is very difficult. For instance, when the tsunami happened in Sri Lanka, we had an ongoing program with capacity building training for social workers and classical dance teachers, who actually each were serving at least 100 children, so quite something. But this concert is serving a program that's in action now. It's in its third year, I'm happy to say, in the Santa Fe Public Elementary Schools. I think we're in five or six schools, and we're serving over 800 children now. It's a bilingual literacy wellness program that uses my take-a-minute exercise programs and wisdom stories, and we have facilitators who go into the classroom and work with stories and vocabulary words, and now we're bilingual. I'm not, but this program is. And it's quite wonderful, and it's growing, so we need the help of the people in Santa Fe to keep this program growing.
And it's something that you offer free of charge to the schools, which, as probably everybody listening to the show right now knows, are in more financial trouble than ever.
Exactly. We offer our programs free of charge to the communities that we serve.
You referred a moment ago to a program that you devised called Take a Minute, and it's literally 1 minute long exercises that people can do in their office or in a break during school,
yeah,
or at the in a moment of pause during the classroom or whatever.
Yeah, it's a really fun thing, and it works really well in the classroom because, you know, a lot of kids and grown-up kids like us are always squirming in our chairs. So when you actually lace your hands together and reach them up over your head and push up into the sky, in case anyone listening wants to try it.
Don't do this if you're driving.
Yeah, exactly. There's some relief and exhilaration and resilience occurs. So we have put that, woven it into a learning. So it's a connected learning work that we're engaged in. We're pretty excited about it.
And it does seem to be working. I mean, not only are you doing this in the public schools, but you've taken it to... My favorite story was you went to a hospital in India for eye surgeons.
Oh, yeah.
And you got a conversation scheduled with the director, but she said she didn't even have a minute to talk to you, so you took that 1 minute and showed her one of your exercises.
Right, and I said, how do you feel? We went in her closet, actually. She didn't have any space, and we went in the closet, and we did half of the exercise, and I said, how do you feel? She said, I feel wonderful. I want the computer department, the teaching department, the housekeeping department. So after a while, I was, you know, training someone in almost every department of the hospital. It was quite something, hilarious and wondrous.
And somehow it relates to this whole question of performance and getting back to our most natural selves that we evolved to be, which is in movement, yeah, rather than sitting still all the time.
Well, I think sitting still is an exhalation from the action. And unfortunately, in our time, sitting still is the action. And so, you know, when we all get up and grumble and stretch for 1 minute, and then we sit down, everyone feels spacious. It's quite wonderful. And, you know, when we feel spacious, we're expansive, we think differently. When we sit for too long, we contract, and then we have those thoughts that we all have, like, I'm not good enough, I can't do this, how can my body's terrible? We all have those things.
Or I don't want to be here right now.
Yeah, but when you take a little tiny stretch, you know, it opens up your cells, and then suddenly you remember that you're actually happy, even though you don't know why. And so I like that place, that place of uncovering and recovering, and new. It's new. We don't know what's going to happen. It's mysterious.
We're talking to Zuleika, and the performance this coming Friday, October 23rd, at the Armory for the Arts in Santa Fe is called Origin, Heart Streaming, an evening of music, dance, rhythm, story, poetry, and humor. Now, the poetry, I sort of associate you with Rumi, because I've seen you dance in these Rumi concerts a number of times. Is this Rumi or not?
No, this time, well, we decided to take a break this year with the Rumi concert. I'm sure we'll be back again. And this will be other mystical, mysterious poetry. I don't want to say, because it will be a surprise.
Oh, okay.
But I'm excited about it, and it's a little different. And I'm excited about that, too. I love the Rumi concert, and for people who are listening who are missing it this year, I am too, but it needed to take a break, so that's what it's doing.
And meanwhile, Rahim Alhaj, the great oud player, will be there, along with Palestinian-American drummer Issa Malouf and Nicholas Ballas, who will also be there with you reading poetry. Have you two rehearsed together? Or are you working together?
Yeah, we have. It's not a whole evening of poetry like the Rumi concert. There's a lot of other things going on this year. But this is just one part of things. And so that's why I've left it more mysterious. It's going to come in and out now and then instead of being the main course. I think the main course is going to be the weaving of Rahim Alhaj and Issa Malouf and myself with other things that we're planning. And then dashes of poetry and prose.
We're going to go out with more music by Rahim Alhaj. Zuleika, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
And Mary Charlotte, thank you so much for having me and for the service you give our community by having this Radio Cafe. We love it.
Good. Well, thank you so much. And tickets for the evening of October 23rd, Armory for the Arts performance, can be found at ticketssantafe.com. or by calling 988-1234 in the area code 505. Thank you. delighted now to welcome Christy Carson. She's the founding director of SF Repertory. She's the director and producer of Anything Goes, which opens tomorrow at Warehouse 21. And she's a longtime actor, dancer, and vocalist. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Great, hi.
So you, from early childhood, were acting and singing and dancing, and basically you were just a little tot destined for Broadway.
Yeah, I guess so, because I did. I grew up in a ballet company, so I had that ballet background, which I'm so happy that I had that for once I got to New York, because most of the dancers that work a lot on Broadway have that ballet background. And if you saw, and I know that you saw and were a fan of Every Little Step, the making about the revival of A Chorus Line on Broadway.
That fabulous movie at the Center for Contemporary Arts, the CCA.
Right, exactly. And it just so well documented the audition process that dancers, singers, and actors, well, more the musical theater performers go through. And certainly in A Chorus Line, it's evident that you've got to have that strong ballet background. So that's all just to say that I'm very grateful that I did have that ballet background. And then when I got I auditioned for the drama club in my high school and got in. And that's when I started adding, taking voice lessons, doing singing and acting. And then so when I got to college and then later on to New York, I had that well-rounded background in both acting, singing, and dancing.
So when you have all of that, which is a huge confluence of gifts that most people don't have, and so you have that and you go to New York, then you're faced with, as we saw in that documentary, Every Little Step, tremendous competition. What's it like?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, people always focus on the statistics, how difficult it is to make a living. But fortunately, I can say that was not my experience. My experience was that if you're really trained and you have the skills, that you'll work. And certainly, you know, right away I was able to get work, and really lucrative work, because once you, again, you have those abilities and have those skills, it's actually a very small world in New York. The people that do musicals, that act, sing, and dance, the triple threats, as they're called, really go from project to project, from show to show. And it's not just Broadway musicals. There's Radio City Music Hall. There's off-Broadway revivals or new works. There's pre-Broadway workshops. There's live industrials, which are often done by Broadway choreographers. And
what are live industrials?
Industrials are when a client comes in, like Kraft or Amway or whoever the client is, and wants to do something for their constituents, where they'll go to some great resort, like, you know, either it's Hawaii or Disney World or whatever it is, and they'll do a show that is skewed to the product, but also it's an inspiring event to help get the people that work for the company to get, you know, pumped up about the product and about the organization. So I did a lot of those, and that again is very great lucrative work, but it's quick, which is also really good. You know, 2 weeks, you're done in 2 weeks, and you get sent to great locales again, like Hawaii or Florida or wherever it is. Yeah.
And so it's a small world of people, so you find yourself working with the same other performers in all kinds of different shows.
Yeah, and it's the same people over and over again that are both on the creative end, on the casting end. The casting directors, it's a small pool, and once they start to get to know you, I mean, what's great is you can get to a place, which fortunately I did, got to a place where the casting people know you, so then they can just call you in and, and invite you to audition for things. And then, of course, there's the whole other layer of agents. And once you get connected to an agent, like my first really big job, Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, that Tommy Tune and Tommy Walsh, who was the original Bobby in A Chorus Line, they choreographed that and put that together. But my agents had heard through a client of theirs, Pete Masterson, who actually wrote the show, directed the show, was kind of the main, well, he was the first person behind the project, and then he brought Tommy on. That was started at Actors Studio, which Pete Masterson is a member of Actors Studio. His wife, Carlin Glynn, who's a Actors Studio actress, and she, in fact, originated the role of Mona on Broadway in Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, and she got the Tony Award for it. Anyway, so that whole thing project was birthed at Actors Studio, and they brought Tommy on. But again, my agent represented Pete Masterson, and she said, you know, they really need, they've got dancers, they've got great characters, but they need some strong singers. So then she brought me in for the kind of the final audition. So that's how things work in that world, that once you get the agent, that really helps to get you into things that you normally, just from an open casting call. I mean, you saw in Every Little Step, a lot of people just came raw to the open casting call. But again, I say, if you've got the skills and you've got the abilities, you're going to get the job, because they don't care whether you're repped by an agent or not. They just care, can you deliver the goods?
And there's lots of really good people, but then the standouts truly jump out of the pile, and you can't believe how good they are.
Yeah.
Now, if you are, okay, so you're trained as a ballet dancer and Broadway dance and probably all sorts of dance, and then you are an actor and you're singing. Let's say you think to yourself, you know, I want to take a break from this and I just want to do some stage acting for a while. Can you break out into that, or are you sort of typecast in that triple threat Broadway universe?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely one of the pitfalls. I mean, there does seem to be, I mean, in the old days, it was even categorized between, in the musical realm, between, oh, you're a singer or you're a dancer, and it's really separated. But with the advent of something like A Chorus Line, that's when it started, those lines started to get morphed and the lines gray, and you were no longer just a singer or a dancer, you were a singer-dancer, or you're a dancer-singer. I mean, usually that's how the auditions are structured in New York. You go to a dancer-singer call or a singer-dancer call.
Oh, so, my goodness.
Yeah. So, but certainly it's harder. It's still, I think, that is pretty much still in play, where either you're an actor who doesn't necessarily do musicals, or you're a musical theater performer. So it's harder to cross over, but it's not impossible. I mean, there's somebody like Mandy Patinkin, for example, who was Che in Evita. I mean, he's a very, very strong actor, but he also happens to have a beautiful voice. And that's why then after Che and Evita, that Sondheim latched on to him, and he did George Surratt in that musical, which the name is escaping me. Oh, Sundays in the Park with George.
Right.
So he did that. And so he started falling into a category where this is a strong actor who also is a beautiful singer.
We're talking to Christy Carson, founding director of SF Repertory, and we're going to talk about Anything Goes, which is opening tomorrow at Warehouse 21 in just a couple of minutes. But I have to ask you, what were your favorite roles, or did you have one favorite role when you were doing Broadway?
Well, I liked, fortunately, because again, as we were talking about, because I really had this strong acting background, both in college, and then I was, my acting home in New York was Actors Studio. Because of that Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, I fell in with all that Actors Studio crowd. And So I really was drawn to more the character roles. I didn't, you know, like to play ingenues. There was one time in summer stock I was offered this season, and one of the roles I was offered was Sally Bowles in Cabaret, which is a great, you know, meaty role. And then somehow they lost the rights to it, and it fell through. And then they offered me instead 8 O'Annie in Oklahoma. Now, that's still a good character role, but I was so disappointed because I was looking forward to Sally Bowles. But so usually I wouldn't do the ingenue roles. I'd do the really character roles. Like, for example, in Chorus Line, I did Val, the TNA character, which is a great juicy part. And then in some of the Fosse shows, like I did Fastrada and Pippin.
TNA, ladies and gentlemen, contains words that we can't say on the radio. So you, if you don't know it, you can look it up.
Yeah. So the roles like in Nikki and Sweet Charity and, you know, all those kind of fun, juicy roles. And in fact, the role that I'm doing in Anything Goes right now, because I've actually done the show three times before. I did the leading role, Reno Sweeney, and I did Angels twice. But I'd never done Bonnie. And Bonnie is the gangster mall. And there's a gangster dressed up as a minister in the show who's played by Tom Romero, who's terrific. And so I'm his kind of gangster mall. And it's fun. She's a character, and that's what I enjoy doing the most, is doing things that are farther away from myself and fun characters.
So how long were you in that world? How long were you doing it?
Well, I actually was in New York 10 years, and I would have been there longer, but my husband at the time wanted to leave New York to go to Chicago to get his MFA in directing, and I went with him. Of course, I thought that was the right thing to do, to go with him and support him. And I continued. There's a lot of good work in Chicago, and that's where actually part of this founding of this SF repertory is not just about musical theater, that I also in rotation, besides doing big musicals, which this Anything Goes certainly is, smaller musicals, I also want to do kind of raw, gritty contemporary theater in rotation with the musicals, hopefully new works like that. And this is just all to say, in Chicago, I would usher for Steppenwolf. Are you familiar with Steppenwolf? Yeah. Usher for everything they did. I mean, and this is just exactly the way I love to work as an actress, just really kind of in your face, raw, in the moment, very present.
Tell us about Steppenwolf.
Steppenwolf is a theater company that was founded by some students, actually. They were in college together, university together in Illinois, and they decided to come together and found this kind of really rock and roll type theater. Hence, Steppenwolf is named after the band Steppenwolf. And these are actors like John Malkovich, Joan Allen, who was here recently. I mean, just a great list of actors. And I was fortunate enough, again, to see everything that they had done, and I just loved it. And that's my model, pretty much, for how I like to work. And so we'll just see how that all comes out.
So SF Repertory is a company founded by you that's producing, well, the first production is Anything Goes, which I guess... nothing wrong with starting with a crowd pleaser.
Well, and that's exactly, I wrote here in the director's note for the program today that I chose that first production because all the elements, it's got the witty Cole Porter score, it's got these very engaging characters, a fun book, great music, and I think everybody will love going to it. But then that's my intention to move beyond just very... entertaining fare into the more grittier ground, which would include Sondheim. My next musical, I'd like to do a Sondheim. I'm thinking about Company, Sondheim, and some of the Fosse shows. I've got an idea. I'd really love to do Pippin again. And so moving away from that, but hopefully from this production, the intent is to show that this is what we do. This is what I want to do, is to do very well-cast musicals, and hopefully the directing is good, the concept, the vision of it is good, and I really think we've accomplished that, and that's what's exciting about it as I see each day all these pieces come together, that we have a set, a very minimalistic set, instead of doing something like some full-on big production at Lensic. It's in this 100-seat house that's just very spare. We have this checkerboard floor and this beautiful sparkle curtain behind it with sparkles, and this screen from which behind is projected images of people actually in the 30s and 40s loading on ocean liners, and with sound. So we have that sound and video element, but also then some Ian Rosencrantz is the lighting designer, set designer, and came up with the design concept. We kind of did that together, but he's projecting moonlight on it. So sometimes we've got a moon there and stars. And so it's very simple, because my intent again was to focus on these actors that are terrific and focus on the score, which is beautiful and fun and witty, and the book, and focus on those elements and not get distracted by a lot of scenic elements.
And if you're starting out with what is presumably a somewhat low-budget production, better to have a spare set than to have a less than, you know, not quite up to par attempt at a fancy set.
Right. Well, I think no matter what the cost, I think this is, I am so happy that I had a choice between two different models that Ian had presented to me, and I'm happy we went with the one we went, because it's really smart again. It's minimalistic, but it just it packs a lot of punch between the floor, the sparkle curtain, the screen. It really is sufficient. I don't think, you know, it's one way to go with producing musicals. It still has a lot of sparkle and a lot of splash, and yet is really pulled back, so the focus again can be on the actor.
So let's talk about the actors. How did you cast? I mean, one of the questions always in Santa Fe, where there are some wonderful actors, but it's a small population of people, much as a smaller population of actors. How did you find all the people to be in this musical?
Yeah, it's interesting, because that's the perception, that it's small. But what I found in the casting process, that actually there's quite a lot of talented actors and singers here in town. And it was interesting. I actually have found these actors that are good actors, but also sing. You know, and some of them haven't sung in a long, long time, or done musicals in years and years and years. And this is part of the joy and the fun of it for me, is to kind of ferret out all these actors that have been longing to do musical theater, but hardly ever get the opportunity to do it because it's done so rarely here. And so it's really a gift to them that they get to do this, and hopefully it will prove to be a gift to the community as well, because it's just not done that often here.
Now, when somebody hasn't been performing for a while, what is the process like of, what would you say, taking the rust off the vocal cords and getting them back into the performing mode?
Well, you know, I mean, I can see within certain circumstances, certain situations, that it's a little, you know, they're a little rusty getting their skills back up. But really, everybody is so terrific. And I can even say for myself, for example, I mean, when I thought about it, I had really performed in front of an audience for years. But it's really like riding a bicycle. I mean, you know, especially for me, because as opposed to maybe some people locally here, once you're used to doing 8 performances a week, I mean, Best Little Whorehouse was a year and a half run. You know, once you're used to doing that kind of that run, that long run, or doing that many performances a week, it's just, it's like in your blood. So for me, it was like riding a bicycle. It was no problem, just coming back to it.
Of course, Cole Porter, one of the cleverest lyricists of all time.
Yeah. Yeah, so witty, some of these lyrics. And one of the actors pointed out the other day that some of them are quite racy, too, if you really listen to what he has to say. And but fortunately, again, as was my intent, that we have terrific actors who are also great singers. And so you're really hopefully going to get to hear all those lyrics and really hear everything that Cole had created.
We're talking to Christy Carson about Anything Goes, which is being performed starting tomorrow and through the weekend, through Sunday, a packed performance schedule. We'll talk more about it in just a moment at Warehouse 21. There is a continual question in Santa Fe about Santa Fe's identity as a theater town. It is certainly an arts town, and theater has always been kind of, what, maybe the little sister of the visual arts? I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, it seems like in this community that the music is so well supported between the opera, all the different chorale groups, and the classical music groups, and the dance as well between Aspen Santa Fe Ballet, Moving People, National Dance Institute. But the theater, it just seems to me that is not as well supported. And a lot of people think that's because maybe the quality has been inconsistent. Sometimes it's great, sometimes it's very mediocre. I had one ticket buyer that said to me that he was hesitant to come because he's been burned so many times, has seen so many bad things here, that he's hesitant to go. And I think that that's probably a prevalent feeling in the community, that, you know, they're hesitant to try out new things. So hopefully we can help to dispel that perception that this is not a theater town, that theater is so spotty here. I mean, certainly my intent is to make it always the quality of what you're going to see here in Anything Goes, whether it's a musical or a theater piece. My next theater piece that I'm wanting to do after this musical is a collaborative effort within the community of someone had presented this idea to me, or suggested this idea to me, that part of the problem too with theater in here is that it's so disjointed and fragmented. You have this group doing this and this group doing this, that someone needs to bring it into a cohesive unit. And so that is what I'd like to do, hopefully in early June, is to do a night that I'm going to call just Scenes, where we do, our group does a couple of scenes, maybe Ironweed does a scene, you know, collect some scenes from some of these groups into one evening, where again the theater goer can have a different experience, where they don't have to commit a whole evening just to this one theater group, but can get a sampling, as it were, of the different groups in town, so they can see, oh yeah, I really like that work, I want to go see more of their work. Or, oh, I really didn't like them, okay, I don't have to go there. But, you know, to educate the theater goer, right, as to what we have in town here, and bring it into one night.
That's a great idea. I mean, the Santa Fe Opera does the apprentice scenes,
yeah,
toward the end of the opera season, and that's fantastic, just to see little scenes, because, of course, you're drawn into a drama and then taken right out of it again,
uh-huh,
soon thereafter, which has its own, it's like, I don't know, dropping into a short story or something instead of reading the whole novel.
Right, exactly. So I think I've gotten a lot of support from that, from people, from the other artistic directors in town, and so I think that's going to be my next venture, is to do that scene night, because I'm looking forward to doing a theater piece again after a musical. And then, like I said, I'll do probably Sondheim's Company. And so we're formulating the first season.
And so people can come to Anything Goes and probably get in touch with you if they're interested in getting involved in SF repertory.
Yeah, my intention is to do a card that's inserted in the program to say, to ask people for their suggestions or ideas, what they would like to see, because they, musically at least, especially, what they'd like to see, because it's done so rarely here. I think Sound of Music, a theater work, was like 4 years ago. Red Thread, I think it was, that did Nicolette and Augustine and Nicolette. But to, you know, collect some of these ideas from people of what they would like to see. And then also other ideas, comments, and like that, yeah.
So Anything Goes is at Warehouse 21 tomorrow night at 7:30. That's the preview. And then Friday night at 7:30 is the gala fundraiser. And Saturday and Sunday, there is a matinee at 3 o'clock with children under 12 getting in for a lower price. For tickets, you can email tickets@sfrep.org, or you can simply call 505-629-6517. And Christy Carson is the founding director of SF Repertory, which is producing Anything Goes at Warehouse 21. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
And of course, we're going to go out with music from Anything Goes.
Times have changed, and we've often rewound the clock. Since the Puritans got a shock when they landed on Plymouth Rock. But today, any shock they would try to stem, instead of landing on Plymouth Rock, Plymouth Rock would land on them. In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was a look down to something shocking. But now God knows, anything goes. Good authors too, who once knew better words, now only use four-letter words, writing prose. Anything goes. The world has gone mad today, and good's bad today, and black's white today, and day's night today, and most guys today, the women prize today. Silly gigolos. So though I'm not a great romancer, I know that you're bound to answer when I propose. Anything goes.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org. We're podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. You can hear the show there anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and you can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, Good Morning Jazz features an interview with alto saxophonist John Gordon, speaking about his new CD.